Welcome to a special bonus episode of Hot Off the Wire. In this edition of our daily news program, we feature a selection of stories covering a variety of topics. I'm Terry Lipschitz, managing editor of the National Newsroom at Lee Enterprises and your curator of news. Be sure to subscribe to Hot Off the Wire through Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts so you don't miss daily news updates. And now, those stories from the Associated Press.
After 2005's Hurricane Katrina killed over 230 people in Mississippi, the town of Gulfport was left with only concrete slabs in many areas. Gulfport began offering property tax breaks to those who built near the water. Former mayor of Gulfport, Bill Hughes.
We wanted to provide an incentive for residents or commercial interests to come and build back better.
Alan Baker, whose beachfront property was completely destroyed during Katrina, said he benefited from the tax incentive.
Homes south of the railroad tracks need to be held to a higher standard.
Catherine Eglund, a Gulfport resident who chairs the NAACP's National Environmental and Climate Justice Committee, is worried about how another storm in the future could affect the town.
When the next storm like Katrina comes along, it's going to be even worse, and a lot of it will be shame on us because there were things we could have done better.
I'm Haya Panjwani.
New Orleans, the city, Louisiana, the state, and I believe the United States, the whole United States, what happened to that city during Katrina will forever change, I hope, the response of the federal and state governments to something of this magnitude.
Hurricane Katrina was a Category 5 hurricane that made landfall in New Orleans in August 2005. It claimed over 1,800 lives, destroyed entire neighborhoods, and changed how emergency response is dealt with in the United States forever. I'm Haya Panjwani. On this episode of The Story Behind the AP Story, we go back 20 years to Hurricane Katrina. We'll hear about the atmosphere in the city leading up to the storm, how current and former AP journalists covered it, and how the disaster affected them personally.
My name is Chevelle Johnson Rodrigue. I am a retired AP journalist. Lived in New Orleans my whole life. My parents were in the military, so we moved around a lot when I was younger, but their home base was always New Orleans.
Hi, my name is Alex Brandon. I'm a staff photographer with the Associated Press based in Washington, D.C. And I was in New Orleans at the time of Hurricane Katrina.
During Katrina, Brandon worked with the Times-Picayune in New Orleans. He joined the Associated Press in 2006.
When Katrina was in the Gulf, it was really eerily quiet in the city. The skies were blue. It was like a perfect summer day. You never would have expected anything.
When you live in the Louisiana Gulf Coast, you really have to pay attention to hurricanes. When it begins to think about crossing into the Gulf, I'm paying attention. I boarded up my house, as I always do, 3 days before my neighbors did. And my neighbors would always say, why are you boarding up now? Do you know something we don't? And I said, no. Because when you're boarding up your house, I'm working, taking a picture of you boarding up your house.
And then when Katrina hit, it was like we were just expecting a normal pack a bag for 3 days kind of thing and then come back to your house. But when the storm actually hit, it was a lot worse than that, obviously. I'm not sure if it was the storm or if it was the after effects of the storm, which really made Katrina devastating. It was the levees breaking that caused a lot of catastrophe in New Orleans. If the levees had withstood whatever damage the storm brought, I think we'd be having a different conversation.
Every drop of water that falls in New Orleans has to be pumped out. The majority of the city is below sea level. So if a heavy rain comes, instead of flowing down a storm drain and flowing down to the Potomac like we are here in Washington, that flows to a canal, which then pumps the water out into a larger canal and then out into Lake Pontchartrain. For the storm, I was offered the opportunity to go with the New Orleans Police SWAT team during Katrina. I had made contacts with those officers many times and covered them many times. And they allowed me to essentially embed with them and stay at where they were, knowing that they would be some of the first responders during the storm. But I was in, rescued over 100 people. Came to one lady, and I'll tell you the story about her. She was a paraplegic. She'd lost the use of her legs. And somehow she'd floated up on an air mattress between the slats of the roof. And she was sitting on the slats, and there's about an inch of freeboard, and then it was water in the house. There was no way she was going to get out. At that point, there were only three officers and me. There were four of us in the boat. I set the camera down and I just started helping. I got in the attic and we tried to get something under her arms to lift her up and couldn't get her up. We realized real quick that we needed more than what we had. And there was a guy next door who had a little camelback. It's called a camelback in New Orleans. It's just another room on the top of the house. And I said, ask him what he's got. I need a mattress, I need a box spring. I don't care what it's got. He leans out of his window and says, I don't have any of that, but I got this. And he holds up a metal lime green ironing board. We get her on that ironing board and Lieutenant Dwayne Sherman pulls the boat up in between the houses, and Todd and I lift her up and get her on the roof, and we get her on the boat, get her covered up with a blanket, that soaking wet blanket that was in the attic with her. You know, you alternate. You help someone and you take a picture. You help someone and you take a picture.
One of the photos Brandon took was of legendary musician Fats Domino. The photo shows the artist being helped off a boat after being rescued.
During the day, I'd been giving my memory cards out of my camera to other photographers that I saw at the St. Claude Bridge. And I was running out of memory cards. I needed to get back to the paper. And the next morning, this would be Tuesday morning, the 30th, the teams I was with were tasked with evacuating police headquarters because it was surrounded by water. And the newspaper is directly across the street. Said, look, I'm going to be right back. I'm going to go drop this disc off with Fats Domino. I had a little life vest on, knowing I was going to be wading through the water. And I walked down the overpass, and it wasn't a wade, it was a swim. And I put the memory card and a Ziploc in my teeth, and I swam to the paper, and that was the memory card with Fats Domino.
I was doing a lot of in-house reporting. I was doing a lot of the phone work and editing and, the regular AP rigmarole, trying to make sure that copy was getting out to wherever it needed to get out and that kind of thing. So they moved me to Baton Rouge and I stayed with the staffer there, Doug Simpson. Thank you, Doug. And I stayed there about maybe a month or so. After that time there, we were able to get back into the city and I was able to see the house because I hadn't seen the house since that. Everything. I wasn't immediately able to see the house. So finally I was able to go in and it was a sight. In Katrina, we lost the house. We had about 6 feet of water in the house. It was totally destroyed. I think witnessing that was one of the most devastating parts of the whole thing because, like I said, after my mother passed away, coming back to the home, was the last remnants of her. And the destruction that the water did was really, really, I was amazed that water could do as much destruction as it did, even though I know that it can. It was just amazing to see. When I came into our house, our refrigerator, which was in the kitchen, was floating in my den, which was about 10 feet away, I guess. Everything was gone. It was just really hard to describe, especially like if you were riding on the interstate, which is an elevated portion in our cities, and you looked down onto the neighborhoods, you really did see people on the roofs of houses. You saw a lot of just destroyed housing. It was just crazy. People trying to get into shelters that weren't really shelters. They were walking towards higher parts of the city that weren't flooded. And then we're talking about New Orleans in August, which is not the most pleasant temperature in the world. So you have water up to your knees, you have sweat, you have chaos. really. And people wondering, what are they going to do? Because it's like, okay, my house is gone, and what do I do now?
You've also got to remember how much we're talking about here. We're talking about 6 islands of Manhattan underwater. Think about the square mileage we're talking about. Everything that water touches, pretty much, you need to throw away. Your wedding albums, your wedding dress, your child's toys.
You're at a loss about what to do next. I mean, just imagine if you were in a storm. Do you have insurance? Do you have clothes? Do you have food? Do you know where your people are? You know, the communication was a little suspect at the time. So it's a lot to deal with. On the flip side of all that is you realize how resilient you can be and how resilient and strong you are within yourself, because you have to get through it.
This has been the story behind the AP story. For more on AP's coverage of Hurricane Katrina and for previous episodes, visit apnews.com.
On this week's AP Religion Roundup, a Minneapolis Catholic church grapples with a mass shooting, and artificial intelligence rhetoric is turning religious. Hundreds gathered this week to remember the children shot in a Minneapolis Catholic church and ask why it happened. AP's Mike Hempen has the story.
Speaking at a packed Wednesday night vigil, Minneapolis Archbishop Bernard Hebda said there was courage, bravery, and love in the midst of the shootings that killed 2 children and wounded 17 people.
How is it that such a terrible tragedy could take place in a place that's the house of God and the gate of heaven? It's unthinkable.
Minneapolis Police Chief Ryan O'Hara says the gunman, 23-year-old Robin Westman, posted a manifesto on YouTube.
This manifesto appeared to show him at the scene and included some disturbing writings.
O'Hara says the children who died were 8 and 10. 14 other kids and 3 parishioners were wounded but are expected to survive. I'm Mike Hempen.
If you sleep well tonight, you may not have understood this lecture.
Nobel Prize-winning computer scientist Geoffrey Hinton warns his audience about the future of artificial intelligence.
It really is godlike in the sense that it's immortal. So if you have an analog system like our brains, when your brain dies, all the knowledge dies with it.
He says one aspect of AI is that it can be endlessly copied and reproduced.
So it's immortal. We're mortal and it's immortal. That's already quite scary.
It's an example of how the talk about AI is taking on a religious tone.
The questions that are being answered are valid.
Futurist Ray Kurzweil says that the advent of AI doesn't change the perennial questions asked by the world's religions.
Why are we here? What happens when we die? Can we overcome death?
Kurzweil doesn't see a future where AI takes over, but rather one where AI dwells within us.
This is going to be inside our body and brain. We're not going to actually tell what comes from our own brain versus what comes from AI. It's all going to be embedded within ourselves.
I'm Walter Ratliff.
The gun used in Emmett Till's lynching is being displayed in a museum 70 years after his murder. The Mississippi Department of Archives and History unveiled the .45 caliber pistol in its holster during a news conference. It came on the 70th anniversary of Till's murder. The gun belonged to John William, J.W. Millam, who, alongside Roy Bryant, abducted Till from his great-uncle's home on August 28, 1955. The white men tortured and killed Till after the teenager was falsely accused of whistling at a white woman in a rural Mississippi grocery store. I'm Haya Punjwani.
At the U.S. Open, the adrenaline of New York just gets going for some of the players amid all the chaos. For others, it's about the smells. Casper Ruud says he loves coming to New York to play Grand Slam tennis, but he's from Norway. He grew up closer to the sea and quiet.
I'm not a big fan of the smell of weed.
Ruud says it's not a good smell.
Every corner, every street, you smell it by almost anywhere you go. So I this is not something sportsmen do.
Ruud says everything else in New York, like the restaurants and the tennis, is pretty cool, just not the weed. I'm Ed Donahue.
a basketball card autographed by Hall of Famers Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant, has sold for nearly $13 million at auction, a record for any sports card. Heritage Auctions says that there were 82 bids for the 2007 to 2008 Upper Deck Logo Man collection card before it sold Sunday for $12,932,000. That surpassed the $12.6 million paid for a 1952 Topps rookie card of Baseball Hall of Famer Mickey Mantle. The only card of its type, the Jordan Bryant card, features certified autographs of both players, along with NBA patches from their game-worn uniforms. The name of the buyer was not revealed. I'm Lisa Dwyer.
This summer, an FDA expert panel stressed the benefits of hormone therapy for menopause and suggested health warnings be removed from at least some versions. Hormone therapy has been shrouded in confusion for years. More than two decades ago, research testing on one type of hormone therapy was stopped early because of concerns about increased risks of breast cancer and blood clots. Concerns lingered, even though later studies showed the benefits of today's hormone therapy outweigh the risks for many women. Menopause can usher in a host of disruptive symptoms like hot flashes, night sweats, and sleep problems. I'm Julie Walker.
The Federal Reserve's preferred inflation gauge mostly held steady last month, but a measure of underlying inflation did increase. The Commerce Department says prices rose 2.6% in July compared with a year ago, the same annual increase as in June. These numbers show why Federal Reserve officials have been reluctant to cut their key interest rate. While inflation is much lower than the roughly 7% peak 3 years ago, it's still above the 2% target. Consumer spending picked up last month, particularly on long-lasting goods such as cars, appliances, and furniture, many of which are imported. Incomes rose 0.4% from June to July, boosted by a healthy gain in wages and salaries, while consumer prices rose 0.2% from June to July, down from 0.3% the previous month. I'm Marcela Sanchez.
A survey shows many Americans have a positive view of the president's tough-on-crime approach. A poll from the Associated Press Nork Center for Public Affairs Research shows 81% of Americans see crime as a major problem in large cities. Slightly more than half of U.S. adults say they approve of the president's handling of crime. But the poll shows there is less public support for federal takeovers of local police departments. Trump has deployed the National Guard to the District of Columbia and has threatened to expand that model to other cities across the country. The poll also shows Trump's overall approval rating has increased slightly from 40% in July to 45% now. Mike Hemp in Washington.
Since 2009, the federal government has said climate change puts Americans and their health in danger. But in July, the Trump administration started to reverse that with two documents. This is key to U.S. policy regulating gases that trap heat. So at the AP, we sent hundreds of emails to scientists, including about 200 of them whose work was referenced in the report. We got 62 responses. 52 were negative, 7 were positive. 15 different scientists said their work had been misused or taken out of context, and a handful of others said it had been accurate. In one case, the Department of Energy said Arctic sea ice has shrunk only 5% since 1980. It linked to a chart, but that chart showed data from Antarctica, the South Pole. The authors said they'll fix it. The reports use data for wildfires that show a graph that's saying wildfires aren't getting much worse. But on the page before, they said the same data they used was unreliable. We asked them to give a grade like a professor gives an undergrad. 19 of the 41 grades that we got were F. One scientist gave it a grade of R for ridiculous. Scientists said the reports were biased, misinterpreted the science, cherry-picked the data, and at times were just plain wrong.
An appeals court has blocked the Trump administration from ending legal protection for 600,000 Venezuelans. A three-judge panel on an appeals court unanimously upheld a lower court ruling that maintained temporary protected status for Venezuelans while the case proceeded through court. The judges found that plaintiffs were likely to succeed on their claim that Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem had no authority to vacate or set aside prior extension of temporary protected status because the governing statute written by Congress doesn't permit it. Congress authorized Temporary Protected Status, or TPS, as part of the Immigration Act of 1990. It allows the Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security to give legal immigration status to people fleeing their home countries. Millions of Venezuelans have fled political unrest, mass unemployment, and hunger. Noem said that conditions in Venezuela improved and that it was not in the U.S. national interest to allow migrants from there to stay on for what is a temporary program. President Donald Trump told House Speaker Mike Johnson he won't be spending the billions of dollars in congressionally approved foreign aid. That effectively cuts the budget without going through the legislative branch. The Republican president is using what's known as a pocket rescission. That's when a president submits a request to Congress to not spend approved funds towards the end of the fiscal year. So Congress can't act on the request in the 45-day time frame, and the money goes unspent. The last pocket rescission was in 1977 by then-President Jimmy Carter. The $4.9 billion of funding would be cut from the State Department and the U.S. Agency for International Development. The fiscal year draws to a close at the end of September. President Trump has revoked Secret Service protection for former Vice President Kamala Harris. That's according to a senior White House official. Former vice presidents usually get federal government protection for 6 months after leaving office. Ex-presidents get protection for life. But another person familiar with the matter says then-President Joe Biden quietly signed a directive that had extended protection for Harris beyond the traditional 6 months. Trump defeated Harris in the presidential election last year after President Biden dropped out of the contest and Harris replaced him. Haya Panjwani, Washington.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky says his country will organize a European track on security guarantees at the level of leaders next week. Speaking in Kyiv, Zelensky says he wants pro-Ukrainian nations to follow the same path, understanding each other. Therefore, he says, I think we will have several meetings at different venues, adding that this week the Ukrainian team is working in Qatar, Saudi Arabia, Turkey, the UAE, Switzerland and the USA. Zelensky also stated weapons for Ukraine's armed forces are one of the key elements of international security guarantees for the country, structured along three tracks: domestic production, European manufacturing and US supplies. Outrage over Thursday's Russian air assault on Kyiv that killed at least 23 people has propelled political leaders of Europe's armed forces to condemn Russia and call for stronger measures on Moscow. High Representative Kaja Kallas says EU ministers in Copenhagen have committed to support Ukraine fully.
It is clear that Europe will fully pay its part. I welcome that there is a broad support today to expand our EUMAM military mission mandate to provide training and advice.
The ministers also discussed European troops deployment in Ukraine to guarantee security and monitor peace. But that seems distant as American efforts to broker peace between Ukraine and Russia appear stalled. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
Let's settle this debate once and for all. Is it more energy efficient to turn your air conditioning off when you leave or keep it running all day? Experts told us that the sweet spot is usually setting your thermostat a few degrees higher while you're gone, not blasting cold air all day. But of course, that depends on a few factors like climate, AC unit type, and the build of your home. Turning it off completely for a full workday can save energy, but in humid climates like Florida, raising the thermostat is safer than shutting it off. Your AC also controls moisture, which helps prevent mold. And your system matters too. Window units are harder to seal and usually less efficient, while central systems don't have to work as hard. Smart thermostats are the most energy efficient option since they can sense when you're out of the house and adjust automatically. So how much can you actually save by nudging the thermostat up? Just a little. The Department of Energy says setting your thermostat 7 to 10 degrees higher for 8 hours a day can cut cooling costs by about 10% a year. And you don't always need AC to stay cool. Experts recommend old school fixes. Close your blinds, use reflective window film, or open windows at night in dry climates to let the cool air in. So here's the takeaway. If you're out for the day, set your thermostat higher. You'll use less energy, save money, and still come home to comfort.
To get that perfect ear of corn, weather has to cooperate.
climate change is making it dicier. Rob Rind and his brother have a little over 200 acres of corn and other crops at their farm in Paw Paw, Michigan.
It's hard to get excited to get out there and look at the corn because it's not a great crop.
Conditions have not been good.
It's constantly hot all the time. It's hot during the day, hot during the night. The corn's never getting a break.
Across major corn-growing states, climate change is fueling conditions that make watching the corn grow a nail-biter. Nicole Ritchie at the University of Michigan says conditions that keep farmers up at night include high overnight temperatures, droughts, and heavier than usual rains at the wrong time that can all disrupt corn's pollination.
You'll have fully developed kernels, and then you'll have pockets of just a little empty white hole.
Overall, corn growers got lucky with late season weather that contributed to what is now predicted to be a record bumper crop. I'm Ed Donahue.
New data shows those great white sharks made famous 50 years ago by the movie Jaws are spending more time in the chilly waters off New England and Atlantic Canada. Sightings of the apex predators are up in places like Maine, where 19 unique white sharks were recorded last year on 47 separate dates, according to the Maine Department of Marine Resources. Scientists linked the sightings to increased availability of the seals the sharks feast on and say beachgoers are generally very safe from shark bites. The International Shark Attack File reports the great white has been the source of 351 documented unprovoked attacks, and 59 of those were fatal. As ICE deportation flights reached record highs, the airlines running the trips have taken steps to make it more difficult to track the planes. That's according to independent groups monitoring the flights, including Witness at the Border and Human Rights First. In recent months, ICE air contractors started using dummy call signs for the planes and hiding their tail numbers so they can't be located on public tracking websites. Tom Cartwright, a retired financial officer turned immigration advocate, tracked 1,214 flights in July, the highest level since he started watching in January of 2020. About 80% are operated by three airlines, GlobalX, Eastern Air Express, and Avelo. I'm Julie Walker.
The director of the UN's World Food Program made a visit to the Gaza Strip this week, and Cindy McCain tells AP,
I saw clearly women and children who are malnourished. I was at a clinic for pregnant women and lactating women as well as children. And it's very evident that there's not enough food.
And McCain says she spoke with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu about the situation.
He's obviously very concerned that people aren't getting enough food. And that's where we discussed the process regarding WFP and how we get in and the importance of it.
But in the past, Netanyahu has denied there's any famine in Gaza. And while international experts have declared there is famine in Gaza City, Israel rejects such claims as Hamas propaganda. I'm Ben Thomas.
Non-alcoholic beverages like non-alcoholic beer, wine, and mocktails have been taking off for a while now, with those recovering from addiction, those trying to cut down on their drinking. And Marcus Salazar with the Adult Non-Alcoholic Beverage Association says a rising number of young adults foregoing alcohol altogether.
More and more younger people are drinking less. And in addition to, they're starting to see the negative impact that alcohol can have on your physical and mental health. So all these kind of forces coming together that's really led to this huge boom.
He says retail sales of non-alcoholic wine, beer, and spirits surged to $823 million last year. And Salazar forecasts it will be a $1 billion business this year. I'm Julie Walker.
Thanks to help from Mexico and artificial intelligence, the call of a native frog is being heard again in Southern California. Red-legged frogs had largely disappeared in California. Brad Hollingsworth with the San Diego Natural History Museum says they found them in Mexico.
A little froglet that's just hatched out of their eggs into tadpoles. So we've been translocating eggs from this population across the international border into Southern California.
They have been using artificial intelligence to confirm using sounds that the batch not only hatched, but went on to breed.
The acoustic model in the AI system helps us sort through this really mixture of sounds, and it lets us hear what we're trying to hear, which is that really subtle call of the California red-legged frog.
They sound like a thumb being rubbed on a balloon. Hollingsworth says more and more they started hearing sounds of red frogs. I'm Ed Donahue. It's a long way from Philadelphia, but a different type of cheesesteaks are cooking in the Arctic. At the Steak Street food truck in Sweden, the back of Sebastian Bowman's t-shirt reads, "I'm glad Rudolph is dead."
Everybody wants to try reindeer and moose when you're here. And it's really good meat. It's like super tender, normal meat. So it's nothing strange.
Cecilia Abramson makes hoagie rolls piled high with moose and reindeer meat and cheese.
When you see it in the sandwich and everything, with the cheese and the salad in the bottom and all the sauces you put on, so it's so colorful and gorgeous.
Tourist Don Hames loves it.
In England, we have like game, like deer and venison and pheasant, partridge. But it's not gamey like that, so it hasn't got that really strong flavor. So I think it's nicer and more people probably like it for that.
Unlike in Philly, the reindeer and moose cheesesteaks in Sweden do not have gooey processed cheese whiz. I'm Ed Donahue.
A girl from a family of garbage collectors in central Mexico celebrated her 15th birthday over the weekend in front of thousands of people after only a few of those invited showed up the week before. Quinceañeras hold deep cultural weight across Mexico and Latin America, representing a symbolic passage from childhood into womanhood. Her family, while poor, saved up for years for the event. Her father did not want the food to go to waste, so he posted on Facebook that there was enough left for 40 people, and that post went viral. A week later, cameras flashed as 15-year-old Isela Anahi Santiago Morales, dressed in a billowing pink dress, stepped from a vintage convertible to kick off the party at an outdoor venue attended by thousands of people in spite of the rain. She had asked that attendees donate toys for children instead of bringing gifts. She burst into tears when she opened a package on stage, granting her an almost 1,000 square foot plot of land in her hometown. I'm Lisa Dwyer.
I'm Terry Lipschitz, thanking you for listening. Audio provided by the Associated Press. Be sure to subscribe to Hot Off the Wire on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts so you don't miss an episode.